I think the nature of low-wage work is going to change, is changing, because workers during the pandemic reached their limit and realized that we actually can and should be demanding a lot more.
One of New York Magazine's influentials of New York City and one of CNN's visionary women in 2014 and a White House champion of change, Saru Jayaraman is a nationally acclaimed restaurant activist and the author of the best-selling book Behind the Kitchen Door. In her latest book, One Fair Wage, Jayaraman, she shines a light on workers, illustrating how people that are left out of the fight for a fair minimum wage are society's most marginalized people, primarily people of color, and many of them happen to be immigrants, women, disabled workers, incarcerated workers, and even youth workers. Those are the people who really form the tipped worker segment. Saru is the co-founder of the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United, director of the Food Labor Research Center at Cal Berkeley. And with all the talk today about the future of work, I wanted to catch up with Saru because as we look at the latest jobs report and the return to work that's taking place, front and center are jobs in leisure, hospitality, travel, restaurants. I wanted to catch up with Saru on a topic that, while often argued about, is sometimes not really well understood. So here's Saru Jayaraman, author of One Fair Wage, Ending Subminimum Pay in America. Let's bring it in. So I guess to kick us off, what is One Fair Wage? Can you tell folks that maybe haven't read the book or haven't heard about your organization yet? Can you tell folks what is One Fair Wage?
Absolutely. Well, One Fair Wage is both a concept, the idea of getting a full minimum wage with tips on top. And it's also an organization, my organization. It's an organization of 300,000 restaurant and service workers across the country and 2,500 restaurant owners who actually support raising wages and ending subminimum wages across the country.
What made you write the book?
So I'm both an academic. I teach at UC Berkeley and lead One Fair Wage, the organization. And we've been researching these issues for 22 years. We know that there is a crisis right now in the United States of both income inequality and, frankly, a staffing crisis where millions of low-wage workers have reached a point during the pandemic, post-pandemic, of saying, enough is enough, I'm done, I refuse to work for these wages. And so we're in this incredible historic moment where for the first time since emancipation, 1.2 million workers, millions of workers are walking off the job and refusing to work for what we call the subminimum wage for tipped workers that has been in place since emancipation and has forced a population, a huge workforce of mostly women, women of color, single mothers, to have to tolerate all kinds of biases and harassment and, you know, insecurity to get their income in tips because they earn so little in wages. So that is what's going away right now. We're seeing this incredible moment of workers refusing to work for these wages, restaurants and other employers being forced to raise wages to recruit staff because they can't find staff any other way. And as a result of all of that, policy moving in so many cities and states across the country right now to raise wages closer to covering the actual cost of living in the United States and ending subminimum wages that never should have existed to begin with.
So you sound very optimistic that we're heading in the right direction.
Oh, very, very optimistic. We already won this in November of last year in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. In November of last year, Washington, D.C. joined 7 states that have already ended the subminimum wage for tipped workers. In just 1 week, next week, Chicago, the city of Chicago is about to make a historic vote. We already have the votes to end the subminimum wage for tipped workers with the leadership of Mayor Brandon Johnson. That's going to be followed by, we already have the votes in Cook County and Prince George's County, Maryland, and Montgomery County, Maryland. This year, we have legislation moving in another 10 states early next year, and we're on the ballot in battleground states, Arizona, Ohio, Michigan, and Massachusetts in November of 24 next year. So we estimate that by end of next year, 4 to 5 million workers are going to get a raise, thanks to the incredible momentum we're seeing right now, a moment of worker power and leverage like honestly we haven't seen in generations.
It's amazing. It's amazing work. Today I had at a meeting with some folks, and I had shared your book and with them. And one of the things they said to me out of the gate was like, they just weren't aware, you know, and they weren't aware that, you know, you could be paid $2.13 an hour. And that, like you say in the book, minimum's supposed to mean minimum.
That's right. That's right.
What has been the biggest, like, when you talk to folks and you travel and you speak and you do this a lot, like, what do people come to you with after reading One Fair Wage and say, this really surprised me?
I think exactly what you just said. Most people have no idea that so many different people in the United States can be even paid a subminimum wage. I mean, look, we talk about a subminimum wage for tipped workers. We're not talking about a tiny sliver of the population, a small, small, tiny population somewhere off in some remote place. We're talking about the overwhelmingly largest private sector employer in the United States of America still allowed to pay a subminimum wage for tipped workers in 43 states, and in 4 out of 5 states in the US, 40 states, it's $5 or less. So you're talking about the largest and fastest growing industry in America being allowed to pay $5 or less in 4 out of 5 states in the United States of America in 2023. I mean, that's bad enough. There are also additionally other workers who get a subminimum wage, workers with disabilities, youth, incarcerated workers, gig workers. In total, you're talking about maybe close to 20 million workers across the country who can be paid less legally than the minimum wage. And as you said, it is supposed to be a minimum. Minimum means it can't go under that. And yet we allow so many workers to be paid less legally. And I think most people don't even know that, number one. Number two, when they do know it, they're outraged. They don't think it should exist. They believe their tips are going to be on top of a wage, not instead of a wage, which is how it is now. And overwhelmingly, most Americans are supportive. It's why whenever we put this on the ballot in mostly everywhere across the country, we win, because voters believe when you work, you should be paid a livable wage by your employer. That is such a basic part of the social contract of the United States that it's hard to understand how employers have gotten away with this for so long.
Okay, I want you to coach me up on this one, because I'm sure you get this one a lot, but I'd love your point of view. I go to a lot of conferences and trade shows and events, restaurant, hospitality, and there's a lot of folks listening that do the same, and they have heard here or there from someone saying this is gonna kill the restaurant industry. If we had to do this, we're gonna have to close. You know, we're not gonna hire as many workers. This is all the stuff that's gonna have to happen if we raise wages. How do you coach me to respond to that, knowing everything I know from your work? What would you say?
I would say there are 7 states that have already done this for decades. California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska have required a full minimum wage with tips on top for, in some cases, 50 years. They have higher restaurant sales per capita, higher restaurant job growth rates, higher small business growth rates in those 7 states than the 43 states with subminimum wages, higher tipping averages, and 1/2 the rate of sexual harassment in the restaurant industry. Everything is better in those states because they actually pay people a full minimum wage with tips on top that allows them to do, guess what? Go and eat out with their families, which helps the restaurant industry. And everybody knows, I believe, who's listening, that the best tippers are actually restaurant workers. And so when they get paid more, they eat out more and they go tip better. And so there's a virtuous cycle that exists in these states that unfortunately the 43 states are not yet taking advantage of, but that's about to change.
You say in the book that tipped workers live in poverty at 3 times the rate of the rest of the workforce. You talked about suffering from the worst sexual harassment of any industry because they're forced to tolerate inappropriate customer behavior in order to feed their families and tips. My question to you, as we think about the future of work and we think about creating a workplace where everybody can be connected, engaged, given the right opportunities, afforded equal respect, What do you hope for the future of work?
I don't just hope, but I now firmly believe that work is about to change in a big way. The nature of low wage work is going to have to change because none of these low wage sectors anymore have enough people willing to work in these poverty wages. So I not only hope, I firmly believe over the next decade, we are going to see pretty massive wage increases across the board. We're already seeing it in the market. It now needs to be reflected in policy, but we are seeing already massive wage increases and we're going to see more. I think the nature of low wage work is going to change, is changing because workers during the pandemic reached their limit and realized that we actually can and should be demanding a lot more, both in terms of wages, but also in terms of, you know, benefits and the way we are treated and our ability to have a union and our ability to speak up and be heard and not be retaliated against. You know, their workers reached a place where they said, I demand so much more because I am worth so much more. And they are getting it. They are winning it.
Saru, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tipped workers are the largest workforce allowed to be paid a sub-minimum wage in the U.S. And according to Saru's book, they are by no means the only workforce allowed to be paid a sub-minimum wage. They're not even the only workforce for whom sub-minimum wage is a legacy of slavery. Incarcerated workers may be paid a sub-minimum wage as little as 11 cents an hour or a dollar a day, depending on the state, due to the exception of the 13th Amendment that allows for slavery in the case of incarceration. Workers with disabilities, she says, may be paid a sub-minimum wage based on decades of law allowing employers to segregate workers with disabilities into, quote, sheltered workshops. You know, this is one of those books I joke about all the time with people behind me that, you know, if you opened it up, if you opened up my copy, you would, it's a lot of stuff that's highlighted and marked up. This is, again, definitely one of those books. I thought that Saru did a great job also today on the podcast talking about and making information around sub-minimum wage accessible to more people. Because, you know, the reality is workers today show up to work and oftentimes the wages that they're earning are not a reflection of the skills that they have. And it's unfortunate that we justify low wages with, well, you got to work your way up. And, you know, in some jobs it makes sense that, you know, you start low and you got to grow. But like Saru makes the comment, minimum means minimum. Have a sub-minimum. You know, to allow wages to drop to $2 and some odd cents an hour creates vulnerability with people who, you know, show up to work every day and are already very vulnerable. You know, as a coach, I always think about the reality of the worker that comes into work who is thinking about so much more than work, rightfully so. Can they make rent, childcare, healthcare, you know, maybe their next job, not just this job. You know, the last thing we really want, if we're really, really trying to create a workforce where everybody can compete and build high-powered workforces so that brands can grow and be successful, if that's really the goal is to win and build strong brands, then it starts with our people. I highly encourage everybody from the front line to full-time to C-level leaders to check out One Fair Wage by Saru Jayaraman. Head on over to your local bookstore. One Fair Wage, Ending Sub-Minimum Pay in America. Thank you, Saru, for taking time to join us. And I'm going to close with one other quote from her book. Saru says, America has the opportunity to right our wrong and create a new deal for equity that would simultaneously stimulate the economy, protect the public health, and recognize the full humanity of everyone. So thanks to Saru for joining us today. And don't forget to subscribe to Bring It In so you never miss an episode. We've got some awesome guests lined up that you're not going to want to miss. Now, back to work.